Welcome, everybody, to Are You Not Entertained? I'm your host, Kent. I am not with Russ. I'm not with Carrie. I am with my buddy Jay, and we are not going to talk too much about wrestling, although, hey, it may come up. How you doing, Jay?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, well, this is the first time you've been on my podcast. I've been on yours, but right? This is first time?
Yeah, man. First time. Very excited. I got my Fresco. All right. I am pumped up. I'm ready to go. I'd leave my girlfriend. It was good. It was good. Jesus.
Yeah, it sounded like a good night, huh?
Oh, Christ. Still can't handle her booze. It's been an awful long... She should be able to handle it by now, but holy shit, when she gets off the leash, man. This is why I just keep her chained up to the radiator most of the time, and then every once in a while, she gnaws through, and she gets out, and the old lady gets loose. She gets loose!
Isn't that basically Black Snake Moan?
Yeah, it's pretty much Black Snake Moan. Yep.
Awesome. All right, Black Snake Moan in Amsterdam. True. Sweet. All right. So, as you know, I'm going to work on this whole thing in February for the first, 14 days? 14th is Valentine's Day, right?
Yes, sir, it is.
All right, so for 14 miserable days in February, I'm going to be doing something similar to my October stuff, only with movies that may be classified as chick flicks.
Okay.
So, since I know this is kind of in your wheelhouse, because sometimes I consider your films to be like vulgar chick flick. Okay. I don't know how it's better. They're vulgar, they're lewd, and yet girls could still watch them, I feel.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's a fair assessment. That's exactly what they're they're shitty potty mouthed chick flick movies, I guess.
All right. Well, see, I plan on doing yours on your film, your film that you just had come out. What was that, last fall?
Yeah, October. It premiered October.
All right, so we'll do that movie the same day that I do Mallrats and Chasing Amy.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. Well, just do me a favor and do mine first, and that way it won't seem so bad. And maybe do Mallrats next, and then bring it home with Chasing Amy, I guess. That was my suggestion for you.
See, I know Mallrats came first, but I wanted to finish with Mallrats.
Finish, okay. Is that
Chasing Amy, but yeah. I prefer Mallrats, obviously, for me.
Sure, okay.
I figured out of the Kevin Smith movies, those two, I don't know. I guess they're are they the two most romantic movies of his like earlier stuff?
I mean, I don't know. Dante's Girlfriend sucked 37 dicks and Clerks. There has to be a little bit of romance involved in that.
There is something to be said for that. Yes.
Yeah. No. I think out of the first three or four movies. Yeah, definitely. I think Chasing Amy is probably the ultimate. I don't think it ever got better for him than Chasing Amy for me. So I guess I've just been slowly trying to make my Chasing Amy, but, you know, maybe someday.
See, like for me, and Kevin Smith, I always think like, I always divide it up. I divide it by the first five movies.
Yep.
And then everything else after that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know if that's like a weird thing or not, but that's where like, I don't know, because it was Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, and then Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back, correct?
Yeah, I gave up right after Dogma. I'm sitting here in my office as we have this conversation. I'm staring at this wall, and I have four posters. I'm looking at those four posters in order. I gave up right after Dogma because the rest of it just seemed goofy. I mean, listen, I don't even like talking about it because I feel like everything I've ever written, there's been somebody, you know, when I hand a script off, that's the first thing they say, you know what I mean? They get done with it and they're like, you know, it's kind of reminding me of Kevin Smith. And I get it because, you know, there's a lot of dick jokes and shit in it. Like, I get it. And I guess on one hand you could say, you know, it's good to wear your influences on your sleeve and shit like that. But I think as time has gone on, that's almost become it's kind of like an insult now. You know what I mean? He's kind of a joke. Everybody's makes fun of his jorts and shit like that. But
what was the last good Kevin Smith movie? I'm seriously asking. Like, has he done anything? I mean, I liked Clerks 2. Don't get me wrong, but I don't even know if I'd even classify that as a good movie.
I really like Clerks 2. I try to watch that, you know, once or twice a year. I don't know what it is. It just makes me feel good. But, dude, that was 10 years ago. That came out in 2006. When Zach
Holy and, balls.
Yeah. It's 10 years ago. When Zach and Miri, or 2000, yeah, it came out in 2006. Yeah. So when Zach and Miri came out, I hated that movie. I saw it in the theater, and I just hated it. It seemed like vulgar for vulgar's sake. And I think that the good thing about Kevin Smith movies, in particular the first three or four movies, was that yeah, man, they were vulgar and shit like that. But they weren't vulgar needlessly. It was, you know. I sound so fucking stupid talking about this, but Zach and Miri just seemed like, how many times can you say, you know, I don't know, fucking cream pie or whatever in a 30-second run? You know what I mean? Like, how many times can Seth Rogen say, like, yeah, I fucked her in the pussy with his stupid Seth Rogen laugh and shit? So it just seemed like it's just stupid. But then I saw it again a couple months later, kind of out of spite, and it's become probably, I don't know, maybe top three Kevin Smith movies for me. So I think as far as like what my money gets, I think that that's probably it for me. Zach and Miri, and then everything just kind of got weird.
I'm President Zach and Mary made it up that high for you. I actually enjoyed it. I've only ever seen it once. It was like back when it was on Netflix.
Yeah.
I saw it once. I had no qualms with it.
I really liked it. I don't know. It's a fun movie, and I think the director of photography, David Klein, there's a shot in that movie, man. Every time I see it, I don't know, it just makes me happy. If you remember, there's this scene like where they're having the rap party for the porno that they made, even though it's early. They're having this rap party at Zach and Miri's apartment, and Katie Morgan, who's like the real life porn star and shit, approaches Elizabeth Banks' character Miri and says, like, you know, it'd be cool if I hooked up with Zach, and she kind of gives her the okay. So there's this like shot, there's a scene that takes place, and it's over top of like a Pixies song, and Katie Morgan goes over and talks to Zach, and it just kind of breaks into slow motion and shit, and then they're talking, and this wordless thing happens between Katie Morgan and Seth Rogen, where she kind of silently gives him the consent to go ahead, and he's kind of into it, and he disappears down the hall with her, and it kind of lands on Elizabeth Banks, and it's just like, it's like the cool, it's the nicest looking thing I think that was ever shot, in my opinion, for my money, in the Kevin Smith universe. But
I actually recall everything that you just described, which I did not think I was going to remember a damn thing that you were going to tell me. But yeah, I don't know, something about Elizabeth Banks. I really like her.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see more of her and less of pretty much every other A-list top actress ever.
Yeah, Banks is cool, man. She just seems like a cool person to hang out with, which I guess, I don't know, that goes a long way in my book, you know?
Yeah, like, I did you ever see Slither?
No.
It's her, Michael Rooker...
Michael Rooker. Of Mallrats fame.
I think it's Nathan Fillion, if I'm not mistaken.
Who was that? Who was the last one?
Nathan Fillion.
Oh, okay.
And has Jenna Fisher from The Office.
Yeah, I like Jenna Fisher.
She has like this funny role, but I mean, Michael Rooker and Banks, I feel, definitely steal the show. I don't know, just randomly tossing that one out there. It's actually a really good movie, and it was done by the same dude that ended up directing Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn, I think his name is.
Yeah, Gunn was an old trauma film acolyte. He was one of Lloyd Kaufman's guys who, you know, I think started off like making cheese sandwiches for the crew and shit like that. And then he wrote a big part of Kaufman's book, Make Your Own Damn Movie. I think he did the foreword for it, if I remember correctly. But he had like some interstitial shit in there. And yeah, it's interesting to see that guy kind of go from helping out on like whatever Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD to making Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wait, so, you know, I actually watched Kabuki Man.
Yeah,
I really did. Nice. That's hilarious. Like, that was back when Teenage Catgirls and Heat was a thing.
All those Christ. USA Up All Night movies with Gilbert Gottfried. Those were my shit, man.
Tromeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Troma's War. Dude, they have so many. Did you see Poultrygeist? That was kind of recent, but God, that was great.
I didn't see it. That's Troma as well?
Yeah. It's a newer movie. I think within the last last 10 years, which, you know, is newish considering how far back the Troma's been making flicks.
Yeah, I've seen it. I mean, it's been available on Netflix. I mean, between Netflix, Screambox, and Hulu, and Amazon Prime, and Shudder,
yeah,
it's on probably two or three of those.
Yeah, check out Poultrygeist, man. It's a lot of fun. And shot in Buffalo, which, I mean, isn't very local, but, you know, hey, New York State, represent.
Well, to go with local, a movie with Michael Rooker called Hypothermia was filmed on the Great Sacandaga.
Ah, very nice. Rooker, a portrait of a Henry, portrait of a serial killer himself, was in the Great Sacandaga Lake. That's incredible.
Yeah, I loved Henry. That was a really good movie. That movie, it's one of those movies that up. The Netflix rating didn't necessarily do it justice, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It was fucked up, man.
Yeah, it was pretty fucked up. I mean, even on my scale of kind of fucked up shit. So. So I kind of wanted to get your feedback on when I do this, even like when I do the horror movies, in my head, I try grouping things. It just makes more sense to have, you know, if I wanted to do a Freddy Krueger day, do a fucking Freddy Krueger day. If I want to do a Rob Zombie day, do Rob Zombie. So when I'm doing chick flicks though, here's the thing. I'm completely ignorant to chick flicks.
Okay.
So, like, I did this, like, schedule today. I wrote it up, and so far, I think I've done okay, except I have way too many movies on it, so I got to cut down here and there. But I start off with a list of, like, 70 movies. So, the one that was really kind of getting me was, like, the classic romantic films. I have Breakfast at Tiffany's, An Officer and a Gentleman.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there like, all right, I don't even know where to go from there. And right now I have Love Actually. I don't know what the hell that is. It was recommended by one of the girls on Facebook that I asked about.
Okay.
I'm Clueless. Got any suggestions for a classic along those timelines?
Well, dude, I mean, listen, you can't go wrong with. Wait. Do we have to be within a certain specific era, or does it, does it matter?
No, there's no. I mean, hell, dude. If I tell you what I have going on, trust me, the eras don't matter too much. All sometimes right. It does. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen. I can tell you that my strong suit, being a chick flick auteur myself, my strong area of expertise lies in 80s and 90s romantic comedies, particularly the John Hughes films, like, you know, 16 Candles.
That's on the list.
You can't go wrong with pretty much anything John Cusack in that era. You really can't go wrong. I mean, Say Anything is like...
Say Anything.
Dude, yeah.
That's on the list. Yeah. Never seen either of these movies.
Say Anything is like, that's the top of most lists, you know, in the top five of most romantic comedy lists. Jump up to the 90s and Jerry Maguire. One of my top 10 movies of all time, Beautiful Girls, you know, a story about not only romantic love, but platonic love, still kind of a chick flick, you know, and a story about returning to your hometown. God, it's a great movie. Oh, man.
I've never seen that or Jerry Maguire.
You've never seen Jerry Maguire, huh?
No. I thought everybody saw it. Movies that I'm just not a huge Tom Cruise fan. Like, he doesn't bother me, but if he's the star, there needs to be somebody solid backing him up. And I've never been a huge Cuba fan, aside from... like Boys in the Hood, and actually this past season of American Horror Story, he was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
But by and large, I haven't been a huge Cuba fan, so...
Well, it's about Cameron Crowe. I mean, I mentioned Say Anything earlier. That was an early Cameron Crowe movie. Cameron Crowe can write this shit like nobody. I fucking love Cameron Crowe, man. And between Jerry Maguire and Almost Famous, and like Say Anything and Singles, I mean, those are strong.
All right, so... what I want to do is I want to read you off this, the what I would have scheduled by the days, and you tell me if they kind of make sense in your mind.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I've seen like 50% of the films up here. In the films I have seen, I'm really reaching for as far as romantic, but I'm leaving them for the end of my day so that if I hate the movies that I watched earlier, I at least can go to bed happy.
Okay.
So, aside from the Kevin Smith ones and then Breakfast Tiffany's, Officer and a Gentleman, and Love Actually, I'm going with a more of a kinky side here with 50 Shades of Grey, The Loved Ones, Sex in the City, Requiem for a Dream.
Oh my God. Requiem for a Dream is a nightmare. I don't know if I'd put that in the romantic movies.
Ass to ass.
I mean, I guess, yeah, it doesn't get much more romantic or intimate than ass to ass, I guess.
I figured though, like Leto and what was it, Connolly? I mean, they had a thing going there.
Yeah.
However, like I said, I'm reaching for, I mean, the Loved Ones really doesn't even belong there, but I like the Loved Ones.
I feel like you could probably lose Sex in the City. But that's just me.
So many bitches watch that movie for some reason. I don't get it. Like,
I get it.
I don't want to see it.
Listen, I watched the shit out of it because when Sex in the City was on TV, my cable was off all the time. So I ended up with like these bootleg DVDs, and it was like the only shit I had in my house. It was like that and Alias. So I'm real familiar with Carrie Bradshaw and her travels. But I mean, on a list, if you have 14 days to watch what's the total movie count here? What are you going for?
I don't have any number in mind because okay. I'm going to fall short of whatever projection I come up with. Sure. So I'm just wrong with it.
But we have to think there's at least 14, right? I mean, we're going to say there's going to be at least one a day. Is that fair to say?
I'm looking to average about three a day. Sometimes I may get more, I may get less. I don't know. So okay. I would say three a day for 14 days, that's 42 movies.
Okay.
So you're saying that Sex and the City may not fit this?
I mean, it fits it by definition, you know, Carrie and Big and all that shit. Like, I get it. I get why people would want to see that movie. But, you know, when you're, I don't, I just, far be it for me to be a judge of anything, you know, like this. But Jesus, when you're putting up whatever, Breakfast at Tiffany's with fucking 50 Shades of Grey, you know, I don't know, but I guess, you know, it might make for a better blog because you're rounding out the experience so much, you know. Maybe you could go for the totally cheesy sapphic love scene type shit, in which case you got to think about Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet reboot back in the day, back in 98 or whatever it was. Because it doesn't get much
with
more.
Leo?
Yeah, with Leo and Claire Danes and the pop soundtrack.
I actually really like that soundtrack. I have no shame in that.
Yeah, the soundtrack was great, man. Yeah, Garbage.
Garbage had a really good song on there.
Radiohead's
I think it
was on there.
The Crust.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then the Cardigans, of course.
Who could forget?
Well, see, this is why we're doing this, though, is because I can at least get some insight on some things that may not really necessarily belong, and you're also giving me some things that I'm jotting down so that when push comes to shove, I can get rid of some things that may not quite fit so well. So sure. This is why.
Sure.
All right. The next set I have is Princess Bride, Labyrinth, and Robin Hood. Prince of Thieves. Although I did consider Disney's Robin Hood.
Okay. I don't see anything wrong with any of those. I think those are all pretty solid and solid movies. And
I think chicks pretty much enjoy all three of those movies.
I think everybody enjoys those movies, with maybe the exception of Robin Hood, but I get the Robin Hood thing. I remember being, you know, a young boy entering adolescence, listening to the Robin Hood soundtrack at like makeout parties and shit. Like, yeah, sure. I get it.
Ah, Bryan Adams.
Bryan Adams.
Yeah. All right. So that sounded good. Next up, we got Sweeney Todd, Edward Scissorhands, and I didn't really know what else to go with, so I went with The Crow, because I kind of wanted to just watch The Crow anyways.
Okay. All right. Well, here's what I got for that. Edward Scissorhands is one of my favorite movies. I have never been able to watch Edward Scissorhands, the end of Edward Scissorhands, without getting choked up. When Edward is cutting the snow at the end of the movie, I just can't get with the Danny Elfman score over top of it. I think that's, does it get any better than that, man? I mean, I know I'm a big softie and shit, but Jesus, that's a good movie. Tim Burton.
It's really good. It's one of my favorite Depp movies. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not here to bash or criticize. I'm just saying, like, out of all the Depp movies, this is actually one of the really good ones.
Oh, it's so good. And Winona Ryder, man, I love Winona Ryder with all my heart. And Anthony Michael Hall comes back from the dead in that movie and just plays, like, the perfect dick who he was meant to play. Like, Anthony Michael Hall grew into a dick. He just looks like a dick. He looks like somebody that would, I don't know, like bump into you and just keep fucking walking or say some shit about your kid at a Little League game. Like, he just looks like an asshole. And that's when we see Anthony Michael Hall really come into his own as an asshole. And I think it was the first time Tim Burton actually did something that wasn't like a straight comedy. I mean, I could be wrong here, but I'm thinking like Pee-wee, Beetlejuice, you know, I don't know if Batman was before. I think Edward Scissorhands was before Batman, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't have IMDb open. But still, I mean, God, Tim Burton was so good. Yeah, it was a great movie. Barbara Seville or
you talked about.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I just want to go back to the whole like growing up into like being an asshole thing. I'll tell you one of those guys that I always really liked. I've only seen him in a handful of things. I'm going to go back to Saved by the Bell, the guy who played Jeff, the guy who stole Kelly from Zach.
Okay.
He was also in Starship Troopers. He was the dickhead in Starship Troopers. Does that help at all?
I'm looking up a picture right now. Hang on. Stand by.
He was also in some Lifetime flick that I'll be damned if I remember the name, but I actually watched it just because he was in it.
Oh, this asshole. Yeah, I remember this guy.
He played a really good asshole, I thought.
I remember this guy. Yeah.
What's his name?
And Saved by the Bell, his name is Jeffrey Hunter. But in real life, his name is Patrick Muldoon.
Ah, yes.
Patrick Muldoon. Yep. Okay. Starship Troopers is a good flick, too.
I don't know. I just always feel that guy was like a picture-perfect asshole for films. And
Yeah.
Regarding Sweeney Todd, I've never seen it. I have no real interest in seeing it, but I already promised that I would watch it.
Was it a romantic movie? I thought it was about a barber who turned people into pies.
Chicks, for whatever reason, like watching it.
See, man, I take that musical and I just swap it out for like, I go for another musical that's definitely on the romantic tip, which, I mean, it's got to be like Les Mis, right? I mean, or Phantom of the Opera or some shit like that. Some kind of cinematic version of one of those movies.
While I would much rather watch something else like that, like I said, I've already made the promise, so that's where...
You're pot committed.
I mean...
Sweeney Todd.
Because I went with Sweeney Todd, that actually got me to put Edward Scissorhands on the list.
Okay.
And then that prompted me to put The Crow on the list. So I feel that I'm making out that particular day,
okay,
no matter how good or bad Sweeney Todd is.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with The Crow either. And talk about a good soundtrack. Jesus.
Oh, my God. The Crow soundtrack was one of the all-time great soundtracks.
Nine Inch Nails, STP, The Cure, My Life with the Thrill Kill Call, The Jesus and Mary Chain. Yeah, it was like
Henry Rollins, Ghost Rider. Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a solid movie. Yeah. I don't give a shit.
So go ahead.
What's next?
All right. So the next day is really where I'm not sure what I'm doing because I have six movies. I just had Magic Mike 1 and 2 and the full Monty. But then I got thinking about it. I'm like, well, what about Flashdance? What about Footloose? What about Grease?
Flashdance or Footloose can eat my ass. I could never watch Footloose again, and I would be so happy with that. I when I hear the song, I get angry. I have to get out of weddings, you know, at like the 2 hour and 45 minute mark because I know it's just a matter of time until someone gets Footloose. So I can't do.
I've never seen Footloose.
Oh, Christ, it is just swap it out with Dirty Dancing. I mean,
I did that last year.
Okay, all right. shit. What was the other? What were the other ones? Footloose.
All right, so I've seen Magic Mike 1. I have not seen Magic Mike 2, and the only reason I watched, because of Kevin Nash.
Okay.
But, I mean, basically everything is dance-related, so the only one that I definitely want to keep on there is Full Monty. Cause
yeah, Full Monty, right. Right, if
it's a great movie.
Yeah, fits your theme.
And Flashdance. I've never seen Flashdance.
Well, then get Flashdance in there.
All right, so
what a feeling.
Would you just get rid of Magic Mike? I mean, Magic Mike's a complete chick flick. Should I go with like Magic Mike, Flashdance, and Full Monty?
Yeah, see, that's a solid lineup, I guess, if you have to do it. I mean, I disagree with Magic Mike wholeheartedly, but I mean, whatever. I understand what you're trying to do.
The whole second half of that movie was terrible. Yeah. Fucking terrible. But that's kind of the fun part about writing the blog is that I get to make fun of these movies that girls absolutely adore and tear them down.
Yeah.
And I get clicks for it. That's the fun part is that I'm getting clicks to insult things that people like, which I don't even get why people would click on it knowing that I'm going to insult it. But that's therein lies the premise.
Because we hurt as people and it's nice to be beaten up by someone else that isn't ourselves.
I agree with that. All right, moving on. Yeah. I have, and you've touched on a lot of these already, 16 Candles, Can't Buy Me Love, Say Anything, and Pretty Woman.
Yeah, I mean, solid all around. They're all great movies. Pretty Woman may be my least favorite out of all of them, but I think 16 Candles and Say Anything are like, you know, you're hitting a home run there. You're going to get the full romantic relationship. I mean, Lloyd Dobler from Say Anything is the template for sensitive 80s male. I think, you know, we're still
seeing. Is that Cusack's character?
Yeah. And a young Jeremy Piven is in it. And Ione Skye. Okay, it's a great fucking movie. And the dad from Frasier. Yeah, it's a great movie.
See, I'm so not a John Cusack fan, so I've always put off Say Anything, but it's times like this where I have a perfectly legitimate excuse to watch something that I normally wouldn't watch.
Yeah.
So now I get to see it, force myself to do it. If I hate it, I hate it.
If you hate it, you hate it. But it's a hallmark for this genre. You know, and then later on, who knows, man? Maybe later on, you're feeling you like the Cusack. You're looking for another run of Cusack. And I will tell you that a close second on my all-time top five John Cusack romantic movies, and maybe my top 15 of all time is High Fidelity. High Fidelity is a fucking excellent movie and got me through some shit. Personally, I think it's a strong movie based on a very great book. But goddamn, man, Jack Black, you know, before he became the Kung Fu Panda, John Cusack, Tim Robbins has a great cameo, Lisa Bonet, what's her name? Michael Douglas's wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones before she went batshit. It's solid, but you know, keep that in your back pocket. That's a great movie.
I had actually watched that when it first came out on VHS because that's VHS era.
Sure.
Didn't that come out around within a year or two of Empire Records?
Empire Records was like 95. 95, I would say. Between 95 and 96 at the latest. High Fidelity would have been 99-2000. Somewhere, Jesus. Yeah.
I don't know why in my head I often think of myself renting both those around the same time, but I must be missing a chunk of time somewhere.
I love Empire Records, but Empire Records is like having a Hershey bar for breakfast. It's like ice cream in the morning. You know what I mean? It's delicious and it's not going to do anything for you, but God, it's good. But High Fidelity is, you know, it's got a little bit more meat to it. I love that movie.
I would definitely consider rewatching that again. I remember watching it. I don't remember a goddamn thing about it. Is there something to do with like a radio station in there?
John Cusack owns a record store called Championship Vinyl. And he's, you know, that's okay. The movie.
All right. So, yeah. All right. The next grouping. The Devil Wears Prada? Bridget Jones' Diary, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and There's Something About Mary. I've only ever seen There's Something About Mary, so that's why it's last.
I will say Something About Mary is a fantastic movie. Sarah Marshall was one of my favorite movies of the last, 10 years. The first time I saw it, I think I saw it in a theater and then went and saw the next show. It made me laugh. Like, it renewed my faith in comedy because everything was so fucking stale for so long. It was, you have an explicit tag on your podcast, right? Like, I can say fuck. That's normal.
Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
So, I went back and like, I saw it again because it just made me laugh. I loved it. It's when I actually started to like Russell Brand. Like, up until that point, I was just kind of annoyed by him. You know, he was just like a smarmy, crazy, intelligent, good looking British guy who just kind of pissed me off because he was all the things I wasn't. But it's a great movie. You're not gonna hate that movie, I don't think. And it's a great movie to watch with a girl. You know what I mean? It's a good date movie. Mila Kunis is unbelievable in it. And she's just, you know.
Oh, Mila's in this?
Yeah. Mila,
you now you finally said magic words that made me intrigued. Because I've never seen anything that of Russell Brand's I've liked, but Mila Kunis, on the other hand, I adore.
Yeah, it's Mila Kunis, Jason Segel, and what's her name? Kirsten, not Kirsten Dunst. What's her name? Girl who's married to the shit. Why can't I think? Why am I blanking on her name? She plays Sarah Marshall in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. She's married to Dax Shepard in real life. What the hell is her name?
Dude, I don't follow any of that shit.
Hang on. I got to look it up now. Jesus. Bell. Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell?
Oh, Kristen Bell. Is
Kristen, right? Yeah.
Ain't she like in everything now?
Yeah, she's in a lot of shit now. She's Jason Segel's Sarah Marshall, who he's trying to
forget.
Oh, I'm thinking
of Kristen Wiig.
Oh,
my bad.
No.
She irritates me. Kristen Bell, I don't hate. So I might be able to get behind that movie.
Yep.
What about Bridget Jones' Diary? Never, ever once appealed to me.
Never moved the needle at all.
Okay. Devil Wears Prada, I've seen parts of, and I didn't hate what I saw. Was it Anne Hathaway and was it Meryl Streep or somebody like that?
I think it's Meryl Streep. It's my girlfriend's favorite movie. I've never seen it. I don't know.
Fair enough.
I got nothing on it.
All right. Well, we'll just move on to at least two of these three movies, I'm sure, get your approval. I'm thinking at least. Reality Bites, Singles, and from that same era, Threesome.
Love all of those movies. Every one of them. Reality.
Nobody I've ever talked to has ever seen Threesome.
You're Threesome the first person. With the Baldwin, the Stephen Baldwin, right?
Stephen Baldwin's in it.
Yeah. Love it.
I thought it was actually a decent flick way back when I had seen it.
Yeah, man. Dude is convinced he has to cut his dick off because he thinks he knocked the girl up. I mean, that's great. Reality Bites is I know I've been saying this a lot, but Reality Bites is like legitimately one of my favorite movies. And I know it takes a lot of shit. I don't think it aged very well for a lot of people, but I saw that at a point in my life where, I mean, I was like looking up to that generation. I was just a few years behind them, but it was like everybody wanted to be fucking Ethan Hawke, man. It was just like that time and shit.
I still want to be Ethan Hawke, okay?
I fucking love Ethan Hawke, man. I love Ethan Hawke. And sure. in the end of that movie, this is going to sound ridiculous, and I'm being a little confessional here, but fuck it. It's a Valentine's themed podcast, and I'll get straight up romantic. I don't care. The end of that movie where Ethan Hawke's character comes back, Troy Dyer comes back after his father died, and he meets Lelaina Pierce on the street and shit. And, she's running out for her taxi, and he's getting out of his taxi, and they meet. I think that's going to be looked back at in 30 or 40 years as like a classic moment in popular cinema. Not necessarily like high art or anything like of that ilk and shit. But I think it's still going to be it's going to be one of those quick snippets in like an AFI best of moment. I think in a bunch of years, it's definitely
especially once our generation gets up to positions where we can make those calls.
Yeah, it runs of the show. Though. Sure. Yeah, that's just such a good fucking movie. And I hate you too, but you know, All I Want Is You playing out over that whole montage where she's looking for him and he's in wherever he, I forgot where he was from. He was somewhere in Chicago or whatever as his father was dying. He's like in the hospital smoking a cigarette, looking cool as shit, even though he's all greasy and, you know, he's fucking Ethan Hawke, you know, and she's looking all beautiful. And it's all this 90s existential angst, and these artists are trying to find their way in the world. I fucking love that movie so much. It's stupid how much I love that movie. And what was the other one? Singles? Singles is great. You're never going to go wrong with Singles. I fucking sing Singles. Cameron Crowe, you know, 90s grunge era relationship, shit, Seattle. It's great. It's a great movie.
All right, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Who is more underrated, Ethan Hawke or Woody Harrelson?
Oh,
I think it's Woody, because the more I look through his IMDb page, the more I'm like, he's never mentioned anybody's top 10, top 20 even, really.
No. I think
he's consistently great.
Yeah, Ethan had like a good comeuppance. Like Ethan had that part of his career where he was like Great Expectations Ethan, and like, you know, Dead Poets Society Ethan, Reality Bites Ethan, where he was young and new and shit like that. And then he had this lull, but then he had this big resurgence where he was like Training Day Ethan Hawke. And you know what I mean? So like, I think he's definitely been on the lists. He's gotten his due in a bunch of different ways. But Woody, yeah, man, you know, Woody was pretty much, you know, Woody from Cheers, and then he comes out with Natural Born Killers, and everybody's like, what the fuck just happened, you know?
Yeah, and then he's just carried on, though, having a lot of, I don't know, I think a lot of great roles.
Yeah, man, he's excellent. He's Woody Harrelson, you know? White Man Can't Jump.
Yep.
Billy.
Do you know that Blake Griffin's behind the production company of trying to remake White Men Can't Jump?
I hate it.
Yeah. Just power of your soul. Just yeah.
Thanks for that, man. I appreciate that.
Another good Ethan Hawke movie during that weird period, Gattaca from 1997.
Loved Gattaca, man. Gattaca's a great movie. That was him and Uma Thurman, right?
Jude Law.
Jude Law, right? He was a replicant. Or who? Somebody was a replicant. Was Jude the replicant? Oh no, they were gonna have a kid. They were gonna have a kid, right? And the kid, they were engineering kids. That was it, right? Or something like that.
I believe so.
Yeah. Real quick before I forget about Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke starred in and co-wrote three of the all-time best romantic movies. This trilogy of movies that is like a must-see for indie film lovers and you know, fucking I dare say whimsical movies. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight. Yeah, no, but yeah, Before Midnight, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset.
Is Julie Delpy involved with this?
Yeah, him and Julie Delpy, and they were made by Rick Linklater. Man, they are fan fucking tastic movies.
I only know because she was so hot in American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah.
So I always look her up. I'm like, geez, she's got to be in something else I'd like. And I've seen her in like a couple other things. And that always comes up, though, is like people on her IMDb on the message board will always say that those are good movies.
Yeah, they're great, man. And the cool thing about that is that, you know, they made that first one or whatever, 95, I think it was. And so it's about Ethan Hawke. He's like an American student and shit, and he meets Julie Dupuis in Europe while he's like, you know, waiting. They're waiting for trains in the morning or whatever. So they kind of fall in love in this night during this night, right? And then the next movie was made 10 years later, and it's what happened to those characters in the 10 years. And then the last movie I think was made 10 years after that. So you get this jump of these two people, you know what I mean? So it's this rarer thing where you fall in love with these characters and you watch them grow and shit for an hour and a half, and then you check back into them in 10 years. And it's really interesting, man, and just great. I mean, they're great movies. I love those movies.
Yeah, I mean, those are the three movies that she is known for, according to IMDb on my phone as of right now.
Yeah, they're solid movies.
All right. Well, let's see here. We're going to move on to the next set. This is a questionable set, but I don't know. I've been debating between A Knight's Tale and Con Air.
Con Air, man. I love Con Air.
Right. Everybody does. And it is a romantic movie to the smallest of possible extents.
Yeah, because,
but
because
I just really want to watch it for Cyrus the Damn Virus.
Cyrus, and Nick Cage brings the bear back to his daughter while that Faith Hill song plays out over top of it. And he does this Nick Cage like, hey, I got this bear for you. It's almost like a Bill Clinton fucking, what's that shit called? Vocal Fry. Oh, God, Nick Cage. 90s Nick Cage, man. The Rock, fucking the Con Air.
He had the three of them. He had The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, and then he did Gone 60 Seconds, which I still think is a great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was it, Leaving Las Vegas?
Leaving Las Vegas. That's heavy. I wouldn't watch that when you're in a bad mood.
Oh, what the fuck was the one that he did with the Coen brothers?
Raising Arizona.
Oh, my God. I just actually had a dream about John Goodman last night, so... He was helping me fight off vampires, like Lost Boys style vampires, to be exact.
Like sexy pop 80s vampires? Yeah.
Yeah, like there was leather jackets and, you know, the Kiefer hair going on and the eyes were pretty much spot on and he's, you know, some Jason Patrick hair. It was something.
It was a lot of hair. A lot of leather, yes. A lot of hair, a lot of chains.
Unfortunately, there was no guy playing the saxophone during it. Oh, that would have sealed the deal.
He still believes.
Oh my God, that guy's great.
He's great.
All right, so we got those two.
Side note, I saw a video of that guy coming out on a con at a con somewhere and playing that song at like in like a convention hall. Yeah.
Oh shit. That's
like pretty recently. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, he's still jacked. He's got like gray hair all pulled back and they play this like they play the intro and shit, you know, and then he kind of comes out of a door. That's like definitely he's standing next to a 12-foot table with like orange juice and a bagel spread and he kind of comes out with his arms all buff playing the fucking saxophone in this little like meeting room of this hotel that's never had a saxophone played in it since it was built and probably never will again. So if you have the opportunity, look that up. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm making a note of that because at least once a year I look that up anyways.
Yeah.
So I look up the clip from the film. So now it gives me something else to look up. All right. I put Beauty and the Beast on there because I think that's probably Disney's best love story.
Huh. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
And then I followed that up by going with Beauty. I went with American Beauty. Because
yeah.
I like to see Kevin Spacey say, I rule.
Yeah, I rule.
Like, that movie, I still don't know. Like, I know that movie got nominated. I think maybe won some awards. But goddamn, that movie, in my mind, still underrated in some weird way.
Yeah, it was kind of like this out of nowhere, this really artsy mainstream movie that came out, you know? I don't know that was happening a lot back then. It maybe kicked off a whole bunch of those types of movies. But
oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was really, it was an interesting movie, man. I liked it. I've seen it a few times. I haven't probably seen it in 10 years, but I mean, I remember really liking it.
Yeah, I haven't in a while either, but.
I should go back and watch it now. I think it's going to be a movie that becomes more and more relevant. Like watching it, you know, in my 20s, I think I kind of identified more with the kid next door. I forgot who played that character.
Wes Bentley.
Okay, Wes Bentley, right. I think I would identify more with Wes Bentley, who was kind of like, you know, looking for beauty and shit and just being kind of this weird, you know, esoteric, abstract personality who's you know, just getting laid and everything. But, you know, as I move through my 30s and shit, I can start to see where Kevin Spacey's character makes a lot more sense or will in maybe another 10 years. So I think I want to revisit that again and kind of, it's interesting to do that, to go back and see who you identify with at what point in your life, you know?
Oh yeah. Because I mean, movies that we grew up with in our teens that we identified with somebody. Now we may identify with the parents. Or,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird. Like that moment when you're like, I'm still in my 30s, but you know, mid 30s. And you're like, start rationalizing. I am older than I really feel.
Oh, totally. I feel younger and better than I have in 20 years. And that sucks because it's not jiving with the number that it's attached to me, you know? But
absolutely. Yeah. Like your attitude, you mentally feel it, but your body, I don't know. I guess I start understanding when you hear like, when guys are close to retiring in sports, like, man, I just love it. I feel like, you know, prime my life type thing, but my body just ain't holding up.
Yeah,
and I'm always just like, how can you be 40 something and feel like, you know, you're in the prime? It's so weird.
Yeah, the body's willing, or the mind is willing, but the body isn't type shit.
Absolutely. All right. So this next set of four all kind of have a little bit of a theme. Going with Transformers, Spider-Man, Suicide Squad, and Deadpool.
Okay. So wait, Transformers, Suicide Squad, Transformers, Spider-Man, Suicide Squad, Deadpool. Which Spider-Man are you talking about?
I'm going to go with the one that came out, was late. It wasn't 90s. It was like early 2000s,
like
right?
2003.
Yeah. We're going to go with that one.
Tobey Maguire.
Toby. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say anything good about the Transformers movie, but
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the stupid romance.
So you think that was like a ploy to get to turn it into a chick flick? I mean, like to maximize the audience, they just had to make it about Megan Fox and Shia LaBeouf. That was like the
whole thing. I've been saying that since the moment I saw it, was that the only reason. And I mean, I always get pissed off because shit's about to go down and they need Shia LaBeouf's character to fucking start doing some stuff. What does he do? Oh, I'm going to spend a few minutes talking to this girl that I barely know. And girls are probably sitting there in the theater, see, like, bored out of their mind. All of a sudden, that scene comes up, and, like, their fucking eyes pop open. They take their eyes off their cell phones or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that was a total move just to make women kind of relate a little bit. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I can see that.
It was just an unnecessary bullshit. Like, just give us the Transformers we wanted.
Yeah, and it's impossible. It's impossible. They gave us the Transformers we wanted in like 1988 when they came out with the movie or whatever year it was.
The animated one?
Yeah, that movie was great. They killed Optimus Prime. Who does that? It was great.
Absolutely. I always said Spider-Man was a chick flick from the moment. I hated that movie. I hated it.
I agree. I don't remember enough about it. I watched it a bunch. I mean, I remember buying the DVD at like Blockbuster when they were going out of business, like the local one, you know, and getting it for like $5 or whatever and just watching the shit out of it because, you know, we didn't have – people forget, man. We didn't have fucking Iron Man and 11 Avengers movies and Thor and Hulk movies and shit. Like we just didn't have it. We had two X-Men movies. That's what we had. And maybe not even two. That might have come out between one and two. So there wasn't, you know, and we had Superman, obviously. But
and we had the Batman, and we had the Punisher and Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot. And, you know, everybody likes the first two Batman movies, and everybody likes the first two Superman movies. But, you know, it was time. So Superman was kind of all welcomed with open arms. I think Spider-Man, if that Spider-Man came out today, like that exact Spider-Man, I think it would tank miserably just because it's just a different world, you know, and, sure. And you know, Deadpool, like Deadpool's a good movie. I think somehow,
I love Deadpool.
Yeah.
Love it.
And somehow they made that work as a chick flick, which is kudos, man, because there's a lot of objectionable shit.
You gotta give props to Ryan Reynolds.
I didn't think I'd ever say that.
Ryan Reynolds, but damn it, that guy can put on a performance when he wants to.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd ever say yes, we have to give props to Ryan Reynolds, but totally, man. He was real passionate about that project, and the dude, you know, he superseded the himbo status and was responsible for getting this movie made, and he did a great job. He's a great Deadpool, and I hope that franchise does well because it's something that you can watch kind of tongue-in-cheek and not have to worry too much about them betraying anything because it's kind of Deadpool's character, you know? You don't have to be like, well, the fucking X-Men didn't wear those
leather
suits. Right,
you're not worried about the fourth wall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
Now, I know Suicide Squad isn't necessarily a chick flick, but my rationalization is, every single dude knows, not just one, but like multiple chicks. They're like, oh, I identify so much with Harley Quinn. And in your mind, you're thinking, no, you nothing to do with Harley Quinn, but you just don't say anything because you don't feel like listening to a woman talk for that much.
I don't know anybody who's ever said that they identify with Harley Quinn. I would be afraid of someone who really honestly thought, like, if they knew the backstory of Harley Quinn, you know what I mean? And I would, if like my girlfriend said that shit, I would immediately feel terrible because I would assume that she meant that I was manipulating her and I had broken her and changed her. I think girls, yeah. I think that, you know, anybody that says that, I think people are just attracted to her as a character because, you know, I mean, she's always been like this really sexy character and, you know, and the movie came out and Margot Robbie's, you know, fun to look at. I mean, she's
amazing. Look at, yeah.
She's a good actress and she's stunningly gorgeous. So, you know, I think that's like, you know, I'm sure in 1990 or whenever Pretty Woman came out, 88 or whatever, there was a lot of women who really identified with Julia Roberts' character, but she was a prostitute. So, you know, I think it's just like,
with a heart of gold, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think it's like, you know, they, I don't know, maybe they just want
to be beautiful. Is it fair to say that Harley is this decade's closest thing that we've seen so far to Kill Bill's The Bride? I feel like,
I mean, Kill Bill's the bride in Kill Bill, I don't know. I mean, I thought she was kind of a, I think Harley Quinn is, I think that Harley Quinn's just a villain, right? But the bride, I don't know that the bride was, I mean, she was an assassin, but.
I'm saying more from like, women want to identify with a, like, women don't get many badass chicks that like, they like sink their teeth into.
Yeah, that's true. I think the bride was a bit more. I mean, well, I'm not going out on a limb here and saying that Quentin Tarantino wrote a deeper character than the one that was portrayed in Suicide Squad, but
slightly. Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, the good thing about the bride in Kill Bill was that, you know, she was this badass girl who got revenge every turn she could. But the heart of the movie was like she was like a fiercely protective mama bear. And that's like the heart of the movie. You know what I mean? She wasn't just walking around indiscriminately fucking with people. And I don't know that Harley Quinn, I mean, I'm sure in some iteration of the books, but I haven't read Batman in a really long time. I'm sure there's great backstory for Harley Quinn. Not really anything. I saw maybe an hour of Suicide Squad and I had enough of it. You know what I mean? And I didn't see anything that was really grabbing me about her backstory, except yeah, she was a doctor and she got fucked up by the Joker and like okay, all right,
they did a piss poor job on her story. I mean I found Suicide Squad actually to be a fun movie, and I know I'm like in the minority on that. Yeah. With that being said, there was some glaring flaws, and the biggest problem was I felt the way that was advertised misled people, which pissed more people off. Like, people were so outraged. Oh, there's only 5 minutes of the Joker.
Yeah.
I mean, like, unless you knew that going in, like, if you knew that going in, you have no right to complain. But if you didn't know that going in, the way that it was kind of advertised, you would have thought that there was more Joker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately, there's two kinds. You're right. You're right. Ultimately, there's two kinds of fans of this kind of shit, though, right? There's the people that want to go and see characters that they've been reading for years and watch them come to life with, like, you know, popular actors of our day. And then there's people that just want to go and watch a movie and have fun. And I think you just got to pick a side and go with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with going to see Suicide Squad and being, you know, and not being pissed that it doesn't follow this storyline or this person looks like an asshole or, you know, Deadshot would never say this and blah, blah, blah. I mean, maybe just go and have fun. I don't remember why I didn't like it, to be honest with you. I think maybe I was just in a shitty mood, which can happen.
Oh my God. Shitty moods can ruin a fucking movie so fast. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm a notorious cranky bitch.
I don't know.
I'm a notorious cranky little bitch. So, I mean, that's how it works.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the curmudgeon that just sits here and is pissed most of my fucking time.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know, like, Suicide Squad to me was just a fun comic book action flick that I didn't come in with any expectations. That, I guess, that was my thing. I don't read the comics. So, like, I don't have those expectations that people do. And I get both sides of it because I do read, like, the Walking Dead comic. And then, like, when stuff isn't quite the way, like, you sit there and, like, ah, I wish they would have done this. Not to the extreme that some, for lack of a better term, nerds do. But, you know, there's a lot of people that take the shit way too far.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I mean, I felt that way. We just talked about Transformers. And they destroyed Transformers. But it wasn't like they changed one thing in Transformers. They changed everything in Transformers. They made it a whole different story. With the only thing that they had that was similar or the same was they actually used Optimus Prime's voice, you know, and they kept the names of some of the Transformers. But other than that, I don't recognize that movie as part of the show that I held to, you know, as gospel when I was a kid. That's totally different.
What was more bastardized, Transformers or G.I. Joe?
G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Okay. I think G.I. Joe may have been one of the most bastardized films ever.
That shit doesn't even make sense. I mean, I don't even know what the hell that was. I feel like they found a script on the floor and just named it G.I. Joe. I have no idea what the hell was going on in that movie. But it wasn't G.I. Joe for sure.
Right. Like, it was like they found a script like, all right, well, we can just change the names of these characters to G.I. Joe characters. All right, let's make it. Let's add in, who was it, Ryan Gosling, was it? I don't even know.
When they had Dennis Quaid, right? And they're like, yeah, he's going to play Hawk. And I was like, yes, fuck yes, that's the guy. He's the guy. He should totally be that guy. And I think, like, it was Scarlett Johansson. You know, or was it Scarlett Johansson? No. Who was the redhead? Who was Lee J?
Oh, man. I don't recall.
It made a lot of sense. I remember being pumped about it. And then things started coming in. Like, oh, they're not going to be... it's going to be like this nebulous war on terror. I'm like, what? That's not what this is. I mean, they're fighting Cobra, right? And Cobra Commander and Destro. And like, what are you people doing? It was just bullshit. It was just total dog shit. So, I mean, but I think that's different than being pissed because, you know, oh, I read the book and this person's supposed to die three episodes. Like, he died before in the book and now he's not going to die till late. I think that's totally different. I think you got to let some shit go and be able to have fun. But there's been a couple times where it's just dog shit.
Yeah, you know, I'm still of the belief. I don't like reading a Stephen King book until I've seen the movie. Because I don't want to read the book and then watch the movie and be like, ah, they really could have done this, this, or this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I was happy as shit with the 6-hour version of The Stand. Then I read The Stand, and then I'm like, wow, they missed the boat on this, this, and this, but it was a different time period where they couldn't have gotten away with showing some of the things when they remake it. Now there's no excuses, basically, in today's society. There's no excuses until they're like, oh, wait, let's make it PG-13, make more money. Which, I don't know. I'm so anti the make it PG-13 to make more money thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's dog shit. But like, Stephen King is an example of a time where always watch the movie first and then go and basically, and you know, read like the quote unquote director's cut, because that's the book. You know what I mean? Just watch the movie first and then go read the book and you'll feel like you have a better understanding of the movie. Don't go the other way.
You can walk away that scenario happy. The other way, you may not walk away too happy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I got three more groups here.
Okay.
All right, I've never seen any of these. Beaches, Fried Green Tomatoes, Steel Magnolias. Am I in for a shit day there?
Yeah, you're in for a shit day. Yeah, you're in for a shit day.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Next grouping is really something I'm looking forward to. A movie called Inventing the Abbots, which I'd never heard of, but has an awesome cast, including Joaquin Phoenix. Uh-huh. Almost Famous, which was already talked about. Good. And I'm going to throw in Armageddon.
Okay. So listen, I love Armageddon, or Armageddon, as most people call it. Armageddon sounds so much better.
That sounds like a wrestler's name, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
I mean, I know it gets a lot of shit, and I know it's kind of the butt of every joke, or was the butt of every joke in the late 90s and shit and early 2000s, you know, but I mean, it's a good movie. I don't give a shit. It's a good movie. It's a fun, like I like, when I remember being a real little kid and like falling asleep on the couch while my grandmother watched, you know, the CBS movie of the week or whatever, you know, and this shit would always happen. And it would always be some like late 70s, you know, or early 80s movie. And my grandmother just loved movies. So she would watch whatever was on. And I remember her turning me on to this, to the original Poseidon Adventure with Ernest Borgnine and Gene Hackman and shit, you know. And watching that movie, shit, why am I talking about Poseidon Adventure? I just got lost. I just fell into a
pile. I don't know, but that's a great cast. So,
oh my God, it's so good. What was the movie you just brought up? What was the movie you were talking about?
We were talking about Armageddon.
Armageddon, right. Okay, so, sorry. So, I liked that movie, and that was kind of like, I imagine that was the Armageddon of its day, right? This like young kind of hip cast. It was a disaster movie. It was when they were making all those disaster movies, like, you know, Airport and Towering Inferno and all that shit. And this is, you know, this is like Disaster at Sea, right? So I think I was like genetically predisposed to like that kind of shit. And then Armageddon comes out, and you know how I feel about Ben Affleck. I fucking love Ben Affleck. I love me some Ben Affleck, especially that era Ben Affleck. You know, and Buscemi and Bruce Willis and, you know, I mean, like these guys, it was a great cast. I love fucking space movies. I like these, like this, like disaster in space shit that's going on. You know, the stakes are high. It's like an extinction level event. And these guys who look awesome are going to go up. There's this two shuttle launch where the shuttles are flying and kind of crossing over each other and shit. And it just looks rad as hell. And then they go out there and land on this goddamn thing. And it's like a race to the very end, you know, and fucking Bruce Willis, spoiler alert, you know, sacrifices himself and Affleck's banging on the thing like, Harry, Harry. How great is that fucking movie? I don't care. I just don't give a shit. It was one thing after another with that movie. You know, there's like this guy's got space madness. This thing's fucking broken. It's like every 5 minutes, something bad was going to happen. And then at the end of the movie, it all works out. And you're just like, shit. I remember sitting in that movie going like out loud going like, they can't catch a break. Like, I was angry.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And awful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Armageddon was one of those movies or one of those things in pop culture that got made fun of for 5-10 years, and then it's kind of gone past that point where you're just like, nah, you know what? I liked Armageddon. Yeah, I don't give a damn anymore.
Watch it now. Just watch it now and go, yeah, this is a solid movie. The astronauts going into the swimming pool to practice zero gravity while Sweet Emotion is playing. Like, come on.
That soundtrack was so good, and yeah. We forgot Billy Bob Thornton, Michael Clark Duncan.
Shit, Billy Bob Thornton is Mission Control. Right there, you got credibility, you know? God, it's so good. It's so good. I give zero shits. I will go and buy an Armageddon t-shirt tomorrow. I will find one and I will wear it. I don't give a shit. I like Armageddon. So anyway, sorry.
So, all right, here's my question. Have you ever heard of or seen Inventing the Abbots?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. I think it's been on my short list for a while, but I've never seen it.
Here's how I came to bring up Almost Famous in Armageddon is by looking at the cast. It had Joaquin Phoenix, Billy Crudup, Will Patton, Jennifer Connelly, and Liv Tyler.
Right.
Like, that's a stacked cast.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, with Liv and Will, I went with Armageddon, and Billy, I went with Almost Famous. Which, Almost Famous, every time I go to watch that movie, I kind of forget about why I like it so much, and then I watch it, and I like fall in love with the movie all over
it's
again.
It's so good. It's just, again, Cameron Crowe, man. It's to say, that's the shit I'm talking about. Cameron Crowe is a magician.
Was that? That was Kate Hudson, right?
Yeah, Kate Hudson.
Has she ever had that's the only movie role I know her for, to be perfectly honest.
She's been in a bunch of shit.
Well, has she been in anything good?
And not in my opinion, I don't think. And to me, she's always going to be Penny Lane. Like she'll never. That's her. That's my Kate Hudson.
Right. All right. So, moving on to the final section.
Okay.
I know nothing about the first movie, but by reading up on it, I came to the conclusion to include the last two movies. So the first movie is Girl Interrupted.
Oh, yeah. Angelina Jolie.
I hate Angelina Jolie, but it sounded like some kind of, I don't know. Can you give me a little more insight started on this?
Girl Interrupted. If I'm thinking of the right, I'm thinking of the right movie. Winona Ryder, Angelina Jolie, right?
Right, and Winona's actually the only,
Winona's the star.
For Winona, I wouldn't watch it.
Winona's like the star of the movie. I think that was Angie Jolie's kind of like. I think that was kind of her breakout, where everybody was like, "Who the hell is this?" You know, she's amazing. Girl Interrupted. I from what I remember, Winona Ryder has a breakdown or something and gets committed to a kind of like a institution type setting. I don't remember anything above and beyond that, to be totally honest with you. And I've seen it a couple times. Okay. I think I own this movie, but kind of forgettable. I guess I could see it being like a quote unquote chick flick because it's just got a really strong female cast. I think Brittany Murphy's in it, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong.
Oh, Brittany, jeez.
I could be wrong on that. For some reason, I remember her being.
All right. So based on what you told me, I can at least qualify my second film, which is Black Swan with Mila.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of like a mental.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Brittany Murphy's in that. I just looked it up. Brittany Murphy and Jared Leto. Yeah.
Okay. So I went with Black Swan, and then just because I really wanted to watch this movie again. And for no other reason, it does have a little slight bit of romance, but not much. I'm going to go with Memento.
Okay.
Because Sammy Jenkins and his wife, I'll go with that as the romantic part of it. I don't really care. I just really want to watch Memento again.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I can see that.
If I can end this whole thing on Memento, like if I end the whole thing on Valentine's Day with Memento, I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I can see. I can see where you do that. Memento's a solid movie.
I think Memento is one of those movies that in another 10 years, people are going to look back and say, you know, maybe that was the best film that What's-His-Face did, the director.
Nolan?
Yeah. Like, yeah. For right now, everybody has the hard-on for the Batman trilogy. They have it for, what was it, Interstellar, and then the movie with Dream Within a Dream. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Inception.
Yeah.
I think Memento is the best of his movies that I've seen. I've seen all but like one movie of his.
Yeah, I'm okay with him. I never really jumped on the Nolan bandwagon. I don't know why that is. I really liked. I don't think superhero movies get any better than Dark Knight. But
no, you don't.
I mean, that's pretty much it for me. And if he never made another movie after that, or I would be totally fine with Chris Nolan would still be kind of like a Hall of Famer. But I just never really got into him. I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, I liked Memento. He did Insomnia.
Yeah, with what was it, Pacino and Williams? Robin Williams?
Yes.
Which wasn't a bad, like, it's. It's not a memorable movie, but it was good. It was fun to watch, I feel, but
yeah,
I never wanted to watch it again.
I like him making those kind of moody movies, you know what I mean? But that's I don't know. That's just me. I never saw Interstellar. I never got my head around it. So I want to. I want to get behind that at some point. But
yeah, that's the one I haven't seen Interstellar. I did watch Inception and I hated it.
Yeah.
It was just too much bullshit. That was it. Like, it was just a film with trying to be smarter than it needed to be. Like,
yep.
It just got carried away with itself, I feel.
Well, let me give you two movies. I know that you have a full list, and I think you've done a great job. Personally, there's some shit on there that I think you're going to have tough days on. I think it's going to be hard to sit through that Fried Green Tomato Day. I think Pretty Woman might be a little rough for you, though. You might be saved by Jason Alexander being in there, because I remember him being pretty funny.
I've seen Pretty Woman once on a very, very, very miserable night.
Yeah, so you know, it might be okay. I think that Fried Green Tomatoes Day is going to be your worst. It's going to be the worst day for you. But I'm going to give you a couple more to add in case you need some wild cards in there, and to kind of bring things a little bit more current. There's a couple movies that I saw. I mean, full disclosure, like, you know, this is kind of my genre. I don't know why, but I sort of gravitate to this. It's the shit I write about. It's like my movies are all kind of, I don't know, I hate saying it, but I guess it's true. Like, my movies have always been kind of like rom-coms, I guess.
This whole podcast is making people wonder how we're friends.
I know.
I mean, really, like, everybody here is like, how the fuck did these two guys get along based on, you know, the shit that you know and shit that you like and the awful shit that I like?
Well, two halves make a whole, I guess, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, but go on. I got fucking Microsoft Word up. I'm ready.
So I'm sort of, you know, attracted to this genre. So I'm always kind of looking for these movies, you know what I mean? Because I'm sick and tired of watching House Party 2, you know, four times a year for inspiration. I kind of go into these weird runs where, like, when I'm writing, I find myself watching like the same four or five movies like on repeat and shit, just because they're comfortable and I like the way they make me feel, and then that gets me into a mood to write movies. So I'm always looking to add some into that rotation, you know. So one of those movies that I saw that I really liked, that's a lot of fucking fun, was Sleeping with Other People, and that has stars Alison Brie and oh shit, why am I blanking? Oh my god. What's his name from SNL?
That could be anybody.
I know.
Sleeping with Other People?
Yeah, dated January Jones for a while from Mad Men. Not Will. What the fuck? Why?
Jason
Sudeikis. Sudeikis, yes. Sudeikis. It's in Alison Brie. Yeah, Alison Brie, Jason Sudeikis. That's a solid movie. It's a lot of fun, man, and it's.
Where do I know Alison Brie from?
Community.
Okay.
Yeah, Annie from Community.
Yep. Everybody that watched the show loved the show.
Oh, I love it. It's one of my top five sitcoms of all time. I love it so much. I love everything Dan Harmon does. But, dude, I mean, listen, if you want to kind of get current with it, it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a really good story. I mean, it's kind of like a fun movie. I'm a sucker for New York movies, too. I love when New York is a character in a movie, like in the old Woody Allen movies and shit, like Manhattan or Annie Hall and shit. Like, I like that shit. And I think that this kind of, I'm not saying that this is a fucking Woody Allen movie, so I don't want to hear it when everybody's like, are you fucking serious, dude? I get it. I know what this movie is, but I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun. Check that out. And the other one that is a bit more, it's not nearly as light and upbeat and shit and fun, but Blue Jay. It's on Netflix right now. Blue Jay, it's a Duplass Brothers movie. It was produced by the Duplass Brothers, but it wasn't directed by Jay Duplass. It's a solid movie, man. It's
got Sarah Paulson in it.
Sarah Paulson is the girl. Jay Duplass, Mark Duplass is the male lead, and Sarah Paulson is the female.
He looks familiar. Where do I know him from?
He's been in so much shit. He was in The League. You might know him from The League. He was in.
Wait a second. Is he the one that's been in horror flicks lately?
Yeah, he
was in Creep.
He was in Creep. Yep.
Oh, and The Lazarus Effect, which was actually surprisingly good. Not necessarily full horror, but yeah.
So I don't know how much you know about the Duplass brothers, but like their whole MO is that these guys are like the mumblecore guys, right? They're the guys who got into Sundance by submitting this little short DV sketch about you know, not knowing what to leave for an outgoing message on your voicemail and having a nervous breakdown. And then that led them into making the Puffy Chair, which was like, you know, the early mumblecore anthem, you know, people, I fucking love the Puffy Chair. And then they have this like production company where they help produce and get all these small films made. And they've made this whole almost like studio system for themselves and their friends and people that they respect and shit. And they're making all of these movies. And I respect them so much. Like, I love those guys.
This is so weird to me because when I saw Creep, I'm sitting there like, all right, for about the first hour, I was totally sold on it. And then like it ended and I'm like, well, these guys will never get work again. And now I'm looking through IMDb and I'm recognizing this, that, and there's like three or four things I actually recognize. You know, just for the uninitiated people that may or may not listen to this podcast, care to describe what the hell mumblecore is? I actually looked it up, but you could probably define it a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, Mumblecore is just like, you know, low budget, like a low budget film movement, quote unquote. I think it was just tagged the Mumblecore movement, but you know, it was like when DV cameras became sort of affordable and popular, and people were out making these like really small, you know, movies back in, you know, in the early 2000s and shit, you know, which we kind of did too, but to not much success compared to these guys.
Yeah, it was kind of like a movement, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like the proliferation of digital technology and all of these, like the Duplass brothers and Joe Swansburg and, you know, a handful of these other guys made these really good movies that were, you know, character driven, usually like, you know, self-examinations, relationship pieces and shit like that. And they really took off like that. I mean, they carved a niche for themselves, and the Duplass brothers were kind of, you know, one of the spearheads, I think, of that movement. But I think everybody kind of universally hates that it's called a movement or that it has a name to begin with. But
yeah, people tend to get pissed off over shit like that.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah. I actually knew about Blue Jay because I looked up Sarah Paulson. I'm like, who's this dude? Because he looked familiar. And once again, I don't know if his name's ever going to stick with me, but every time I see him, I'm like, he looks really familiar. And then I'm like, oh, he's a creep guy. Yeah. So I actually had heard about this movie sometime last year, at the very least, when I was looking up Sarah Paulson, who is a hell of an actress.
Oh,
although
so good,
if she's not featured this coming season, like as a big time star, that's okay. Like, it's really okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot from her, but Blue Jay was, you know, Mark Duplass plays this character who comes home to clean up his family home after his mother dies, and Sarah Paulson's like his high school girlfriend, and she's in town for a separate reason, and they kind of run into each other. So it's this, like, you know, it's a small movie with minimal characters, and, you know, it's really just the two of them. And watching this relationship kind of play out, these like two strangers who reconnect in this very short period of time. It's really good, man. When it was over, I like said out loud, like, well, I don't need to make any more movies. I mean, that's the kind of, that's the shit I'm talking about right there. But yeah, it's a great movie. You should check that out.
Oh, I will add to the list because I can add shit to the list. I can keep going beyond Valentine's Day.
He giveth and he taketh away.
Like, the nice thing is that throughout the year, I don't have anything going on aside from Walking Dead when it's on, Fear the Walking Dead, American Horror Story, which comes on in October, and then October shit. So, I've been thinking about for the past like 3 years is, like, I would just like to one day, every day, just take one of my movies, watch it, review it. Because I have so many movies that I've never opened up, never watched, never, you know, don't remember them, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Like, so even in a case like this where, hey, maybe I don't get through 42 films in this month, I don't care. I got plenty of time. I got nothing else better to do.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's cool that you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the wrestling shit, which, let me tell you, I think I told you already that I watched all 29 Royal Rumbles.
That's such a commitment. I mean, good for you. I couldn't do that.
By the end, dude, I was just like, I didn't zone out, but there were some Rumbles that were so bad. Like, from, say, 1993 to 96, like those four, they were so bad. Actually, 97 was bad too, because I wasn't watching the whole event. I was just watching the Royal Rumble match itself.
Which was the one that was in Albany?
That was 1992, the Flair year.
92. I was front row for that.
I was up in the nosebleeds somewhere.
I wore a red hoodie. I think you can still see me. I think you can see me in the edit. I'm wearing a red hoodie. It was 92. Holy shit, 92.
Yeah, 90s, man.
Wow.
You know what's weird, though? That still holds up as an incredible Royal Rumble. That was the year that Macho Man Randy Savage had such a vendetta with Jake the Snake Roberts that he kind of forgot what the hell he was doing. He climbs to the top rope, jumps down on an eliminated Jake the Snake, thereby eliminating himself thereby having the commentators make up a new rule on the spot that somebody has to propel you over to be eliminated. Uh-huh. By 1987, that rule would no longer apply, as Mil Mascaris, who's a Mexican wrestling legend, did something similar, but this time it counted as an elimination. They clearly just didn't need him as much as they needed Macho Man in the match.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there was a year, I don't, 96, 97, where for whatever reason they said, nope, you can't come back at the ring and eliminate people. Now, pretty much this tactic happens every like 3 or 4 years. Somebody who's eliminate somebody else. Actually, it's probably more often than that even. But 1 year, there's like, nope, this don't count. Wrestling at its finest.
I haven't watched 5 minutes of wrestling in 15 years or 20 years, I bet. But I think Sunday is the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And I think that Sean and I are going to podcast it for our podcast, Hard On. So we'll see how that goes. I'm me trying to make sense of professional wrestling 20 years removed, not having any idea what's going on, and trying to recognize people or places or voices, trying to make sense of it.
Sure. I mean, they brought three old guys. They got Brock, Taker, and Goldberg. You know who those three guys are, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Taker has a chance. The other two probably don't. And then you got a few other younger guys. It'd be nice to see them push younger guys, but WWE has this tendency to keep pushing the older guys that are already established. Never makes any sense anymore.
Yeah.
But like, I camp with the whole spreadsheet. Every year I have a spreadsheet and Russ comes over and whoever else is here and we do picks, and I have like this whole point structure. Like, we used to bet on this stuff. It was great. We it was a whole event just predicting the random shit.
Interesting.
So, yeah, we always had more fun with that than, say, like a WrestleMania. Because WrestleMania is just like, pretty much you kind of know what's going to happen.
It's pageantry.
Because, yeah, it's the pageantry, it's the stars, it's finishing up storylines. So if it makes sense for a storyline to finish in a certain way, more than likely it's going to happen that way. Whereas the Royal Rumble, you don't always know. So well, that's fun. Now, before we end this, we every time we've ever done a podcast, basketball gets brought up. And since your Knicks have been in the news a lot lately, I just got to know, do you think Carmelo's getting traded?
Yes, I think he is. I think he's gone. I think he's gone. In fact, tonight. What's that?
Do you think he's going to the Clippers?
I think he's going to the Clippers. That's my guess. I think he's going to the Clippers, or he's not leaving. But I think that now he's at a point where he doesn't want to be there. I think it's fucked up the way it played out. I'm not the biggest Carmelo Anthony fan. I tend to agree with Phil Jackson that he stops the offense and, you know, we'll try to jab step somebody for 22 seconds of the shot clock and then fire up some bullshit. I've seen him. I've been watching him do it for years. But having said that, there's a better way to handle it, I think. And
this was terribly handled, yeah.
Yeah, and going to the media and shit and not hashing it out. And then tonight, I watched the game tonight, and the national anthem was interrupted many times with chants of "Keep Mello." But
really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. But now having said that, when Mello got cold, the place turned on him in the third quarter, just turned on him. And he hit, I think it was when he got fouled putting up a three. Yeah, he had three foul shots, I think. I don't know if this was when it happened. I think he might have hit a dagger at some point late in the fourth or whatever, and the crowd went nuts. And Mello can be seen yelling, "I don't want it. I don't want it." He's just yelling at the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, with anger.
He's just sick of it, right?
Yeah,
now.
He doesn't want their fucking cheers anymore. They've been beating the shit out of him. You know, and I mean, I get where he's coming from. I don't know. I think the NBA is fucked up. I think the power system is fucked up. I think that players don't respect coaches because they're not making $60 million a year. And as a result, this everything sucks. Now you're just operating on talent, and the coaches are just glorified fucking, you know, bench coaches at this point. So I don't know.
I I'm sitting here thinking, wow, if the Clippers got Carmelo, granted, I don't think they have enough to get past Golden State or San Antonio. No. They probably still a second round team, but NBA is getting to this horrible point where you have too few teams that are legitimate contenders.
Oh yeah. And
everybody will argue, oh, well, that's the same way it's been every year. No, it's not.
Not like this. There's no way in hell that the finals this year isn't going to be a repeat of last year. There's no way it's possible.
Which will be the third year in a row.
Yeah, and you look at a team like San Antonio, who on paper is a solid team, and these guys are like, we look at them as scrappers. Like, oh, look at them. They're winning games. No, they're a crazy talented team.
I'm on the back. Good for them, you know?
Yeah. But they can never – you're not going to compete against Golden State in the West. You're just not going to do it. You know what I mean? And then just destroys – I mean, dude, the West is ridiculous. There's nothing – you can't do anything in the West. But, I mean, the same thing, I guess, can be said for the East. Everybody's just playing for second place in both divisions and or both conferences. And, you know, I think that's it. It's a foregone conclusion that it's going to be the Cavs and the Warriors again. And so, you know, you just got to, I guess, pick a team and ride them into the ground and just know you're not going to be watching basketball in June.
All I know is I'm cheering on Russell Westbrook for whatever the hell he does.
I hate Russell Westbrook, but I was talking about this last night on another podcast. I can't fucking stand Russell Westbrook, but Russell Westbrook is playing basketball. He's playing like a woman who got cheated on. And now he's like, you know what? I'm going to fucking show you. I'm going to get to the gym. I'm going to fix me. I'm going to feel better about me. And I'm going to make you feel like a piece of shit. And that's what he's doing right now. He's going out there and fucking exacting revenge. No one is going to play harder than Russell Westbrook. Nobody. It's impossible.
Is this the greatest revenge season ever? I was thinking about that. Like,
no, this
before
yeah, ever.
This, like, what was best before this? Was it like Barkley going to the Suns?
Yeah, maybe Barkley going to the Suns, or maybe Shaq. You know what I mean? Like going to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, maybe Shaq, but not like this.
This is ridiculous.
He's got 24 triple doubles. I mean, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he's essentially playing by himself. I mean, he had 45 points last night, and he didn't look tired. I fucking hate Russell Westbrook. I don't like him. I don't like his attitude. I don't like that he walks off the court with 12 seconds left in the fourth quarter. I don't like that he dresses like Cyndi Lauper. I hate all of that shit. But I got to respect him, man. I mean, you know, I'm pulling for the guy.
He's not a likable dude, but God damn it, you got to kind of like sit back and just marvel at what he's doing right now.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, he's like totally justified in it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, man. Like, yeah, he is.
Durant just did like the thing, and we talked about this before, but God damn it, that was just like something that no other legend that I can think of would have ever done.
No,
when you're that close to the finals and then just be like, yeah, I'm gonna switch to the other team.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's all bad.
Yeah.
Hard to watch.
Do you think, this has been brought up quite a few times, do you think with the salary cap, do you think that there should be no contract salary cap, meaning that every team gets, you know, their $80 million to spend on whoever, but if LeBron James can collect 60 of that $80 million, so be it. Would you be in favor of that system?
Well, that eliminates like these big super teams, right? I mean,
that's the whole idea, is that it would totally, because you know what, at some point Klay Thompson's like, yeah, I could get $15 million here, or I could be making $40 million from the Hornets, for instance.
That's yeah, and I think that's gonna happen. But okay, in that scenario though, I think what ends up happening is that these guys have like a team or an association meeting and say, all right, let's look at what we're really doing here. The glory days are over. Like Van Halen isn't making any more money selling albums. It's just, we're not, this is not the world we live in anymore. So we know every team's got $80 million. we know we're going to get bonuses for championships. We know we're going to get endorsement deals based on, you know, what our winning percentage is. So, you know, we all have to agree that the max salary for the superstars, and everybody knows who's a superstar in this room, is $15 million. So we're all going to agree to take that amount of money as the max so that we can build good teams. And that, I think that's probably how it would happen.
I don't know, man. Like, it's
they all want to win. You know, they want to be rich, but they all want to win, and because winning makes them richer. So it's like I don't think it would fall into favor for these teams to have one guy make 60 and then they got to split 20 up. I don't think it would fall in, because, you know, and then I mean realistically, there's five positions on, you know, there's five starters. You could pay, I mean, you know, you could make an argument for any one of those positions being a marquee player. There's always been a marquee player at every point, right? So they could always be the big contract. So basically, you give James Harden $60 million and then what? You have a terrible front court, or, you know what I mean?
Well, that'd be the folly of the whole thing, is watching smart GMs do smart things and, you know, Phil Jackson and James Dolan do what they do, or fucking Garmin and Paxson in Chicago, who actually I think Chicago's a better trading spot for Carmelo.
Yeah.
I think, like, as much as, like, this is awful, I'd love the Bulls just to trade away Rajon Rondo to the Knicks, because
I don't like Rajon Rondo, man. But
I hate him.
He was totally right with what he said today. Did you see that shit?
No.
Butler and Wade blasted their team because they, I don't know, they're losing or they lost a 10-point lead or some shit like that. So Rajon Rondo got on Instagram, posted a picture of him, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett from when they played in Boston together, and did this whole thing where he was like, my vets wouldn't talk shit in the media. My vets never took days off. My vets showed the young guys that, you know, the importance of working hard and never put a loss on them and accepted responsibility and got up the next day and got in the gym early. You know, my vets taught me how to play, like shit like that. And he was totally fucking right. He was 100% right.
Yeah.
The most important point I think he made was, like, my vets listened to the coach and the coaches weren't intimidated by talent. And I think that's huge. That shit doesn't happen anymore. I mean, look at Tyronn Lue. You know, like, Tyronn Lue has the audacity to walk around the court like he won a fucking championship. Dude, give your ring to LeBron James. You didn't win shit. Stop that. Stop that shit. Because you could have called a play. I watched this shit happen in huddles, man. He draws up a play. LeBron shakes his head and everybody looks at LeBron and they're doing what this guy says. LeBron's out with an injury and these guys are listening to LeBron James. I mean, it's a total...
LeBron is... I mean, for fuck's sakes, he was calling out the owner potentially for not spending enough. I mean, he just wields this unworldly power that most coaches just don't have power anymore. Like, you're Greg Popovich. Yeah, but he's like the rare part now. Like, he's the rare coach that still, I think Rick Carlisle still in that class.
Yeah, Thibodeau. I mean, there's a couple coaches, but... Yep. But listen, I mean, I was having a conversation with a guy at work today. It doesn't matter. You know, his question to me was, should big market teams have championship coaches? Should that be who they go after so that these players can respect the coaches? And my response is, hell no. These players should respect the coaches no matter what. Luke Walton is a child, but lost like two games in half a season when he replaced Steve Kerr. Like, I mean, you just listen to your coach. He's your coach. You learn that shit from the time you're playing like biddy ball till you know your last day in the association. You listen to your coach. Your coach is your guy. He's the guy that's responsible for your behavior on and off the court. I mean, he's your fucking coach. And I know that we kind of entered this culture of superstars, but dude, Michael Jordan listened to Phil Jackson. You know, Michael Jordan had an ego the size of Michael Jordan, and he listened to Phil Jackson because Phil Jackson was the fucking coach. Pat Ewing, Charles Oakley, Larry Bird, man. You know, Reggie Miller.
Magic listened to Riley.
Magic Johnson.
One of the smartest players of all time.
The whole Showtime Lakers team. You know, like these legends that we enshrined in Springfield, these guys that are larger than life on the Mount Rushmore, you know, from all recorded time up until maybe the early 2000s, I think is when it kind of started. Now everybody's intimidated by talent. Everybody's intimidated by contract. Everyone's afraid to talk shit because a player will just fucking bitch and leave or complain about you.
You get fired, like Rick Adelman with Boogie Cousins.
Yeah. Or what's his name? In Cleveland,
Mike Brown?
No. The guy that Tyron.
Okay. The guy that was a good overseas coach.
He was a great overseas coach, and he lost like a handful of games that season, and LeBron got him fired. Right. That's absolutely fucked up.
Ridiculous.
The way they ran Kevin McHale out of Houston. That's your coach, guys.
That was fucked.
I know that you have an all-players meeting and you're protected, you know, by the association, by your union and shit like that. But guys, that's your coach. That's the boss. You know, don't think it's cool to throw a coup. Don't think that works. Because now you're running your team, you know. And I know James Harden is a smart dude and shit like that, but James Harden's playing ball. James Harden's not studying shot charts. James Harden isn't studying fucking defensive matchups and shit. That's the coach's job. It's the coach's job to sit back and watch plays develop. Shit you can't see when you're on the floor with nine other people. And now, you know, you're kind of fostering this culture of players, of coaches being afraid to stand up to their players. And that's what's happening in New York.
That actually happened in Boston just last week when Brad Stevens was like, no, it was okay that Isaiah Thomas waved off my play. He made the play. He made the shot and everything was good. And I'm like, but you're the coach.
Yeah, no, that'll get you benched, sir. That's fucked up.
I read this interesting thing on ESPN, and it was about Dirk, Paul Pierce, and Vince Carter, because they're still in the NBA. They're like the elder statesmen now.
Yeah.
I was reading the message boards, and I'm like, holy shit, some people are really saying that Paul Pierce is the best of the trio. I don't get it. Like, no. To me, it's clearly Dirk, but it's a huge gap. And then I think, talent-wise, I think Vince Carter over Paul Pierce. I know Pierce could defend a little bit better, but Paul Pierce is nothing without Garnett and Ray Allen.
That's the thing. They're looking back at that with the dynasty teams in mind. They're looking back at those great Boston teams that had, you know, the best record in the league and shit like that. That's part of the history. And you're looking at Vince Carter in fucking Toronto. You know,
Vince Carter was like one of the. I mean, him and Tracy McGrady, if they could have ever got their heads up, that's a devastating, athletic, crazy as hell duo. Yeah. I mean, that could have been Pippen and Jordan.
I agree.
I mean, minus, you know, Vince is never going to be Jordan, but I mean, statistically, it could have been close.
No, they could have been a dominant team for sure. They could have been a dynasty. Those guys, those are dynasty players for sure. But that's not, I don't know. It was a weird transition period for the NBA. And the NBA's in a weird period now. I mean, it's a period that I personally like. I mean, I like shooters. So I like this three-point game that's so prevalent right now. It'll swing the other way, though, I think, you know.
I keep waiting for, like, some coach to come out with, like, a defense that can handle this, because that's always the NBA. The NBA finds an offense, so now some defensive-minded coach, a Thibodeau or, you know, somebody from the past, and then it kind of goes back and forth. So,
the problem is that there's teams like Golden State who have built themselves in a way that's like, yeah, you can run them off the three-point line, but then you got some freak like Kevin Garnett that can do it all. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? You got some crazy ass ball handlers who can put a ball anywhere on the court, and they're all deadly from everywhere. I mean, dude, I remember Andrew Bogut was draining threes last year in Golden State. When your center can hit a dead on 27 foot, I mean, that's ridiculous. What do you do as a defense? Run them off the line. Go ahead, but they can play inside too. I don't know.
Right. I mean, so what if they're just scoring twos? The fact of the matter is that they're scoring twos with ridiculous shooting percentages because they're always wide open, because you pick your poison no matter what. Like, Zsa Pachulia, he's actually a pretty good player. Like, he was on the Mavs last year. I watched him quite a bit. He's perfectly good for that team.
Yeah. Harrison Barnes is a good example of what you were talking about when you were saying, you know, you can either like Clay Thompson as an example about how he could play in Golden State and get $15 million, or he could go somewhere else and get 40. I mean, Harrison Barnes is a great example of that, right? Harrison Barnes went from being a role player and winning a championship, now he's the man where he is. He's the, you know, he's the number one. He's the go-to.
He's killing it. I got to give Harrison, like, I was like, God, I don't know if that was a good signing, but I talked myself into it.
Yeah.
He's paid off, I feel.
Yeah. He's going to flourish. But, you know, he gets to flourish.
Sure, but now he doesn't get the championship because Mavs are going to go through a painful rebuilding process.
Yeah.
No doubt. All right. Let's see, where are we at? We're about an hour and a half here. I think this is pretty good.
Cool.
So, before we go, if you want to tell people where they can find your film so they can buy it, because yeah, I'm going to write up
you. Sure. You can go to trenchmouthproductions.com. It's all one word. It's a long website. I apologize for that. trenchmouthproductions.com. And you'll see a link there for Death Before Discomfort, which is our latest movie. It's like $2. You can just click the link and you'd be brought to another site. I think it's at Real House now, realhouse.org. But yeah, you can buy it, you can rent it, you can pay the $2 or whatever it is, $2 or $3. Or, you know, if you want to support our next movie, which we're just starting work on now, anything that you pay above and beyond that goes to the budget of our next movie. So you can do that. Or listen to the podcast or buy t-shirts or whatever the hell you want to do there.
Yeah, I mean, hell, I bought it. The worst part, I didn't know
you didn't have to buy it. I would have sent you a link, man. Jesus.
Yeah. I wanted to pay $1.92 and it wouldn't allow me to. I'm like,
sorry, man.
Fine. I'll just do the norm.
I would have known it was you as soon as I saw the 92.
Yeah. So there's that. And hopefully everything goes well. How long are you planning on the shoot? You got to schedule out for 4 months, 3 months.
Right now we're just getting ready for auditions. Actually, we had an audition last night here at the office. We had someone come in, but we have an open casting call on the 11th and 12th of February. One of them's in Schenectady at the public library. The other one's at the Hilton Garden Inn in Albany. I think Schenectady is the Saturday, the 11th. We're doing that, and then, you know, we're kind of crewing up and shit like that. We've been working on that. We're trying to get shooting in April. So we shoot April and May. That's the goal. Which are nice months to shoot around here. It's not miserably bitchy cold.
Don't have to worry about the weather going from snowy to green grass to snow.
Yeah.
Like, fucking A, man.
Yeah, we know all about that shit. We should do are you not entertained about our odyssey with our first movie?
Absolutely. We can... Maybe when you need a break from everything you're doing, we can absolutely do that. Totally. That would be cool with me. All right, man.
Cool,
well,
man. Thanks
thank
for having
you for
me
coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having
the
me.
The three people it. That listen to this, they'll be happy.
Yeah, well, go watch some sappy movies, dude. I mean, I know it's not your thing, but you know, some of them, you'll have a better understanding, I think. You'll be able to tell the difference between, like, you know, a Chasing Amy and a Fried Green Tomatoes.
I would hope so. If I can't, I am fucked. All right, man. Well, thank you very much. And I don't know. We'll get together sometime soon, hopefully.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right.